This week's episode of the FitCast is brought to you by BlackStarLabs.com, one of the best-tasting protein powder out there and a great branched-chain amino acid supplement called ICE. You can check them out at BlackStarLabs.com. Don't forget to mention the FitCast when you place your order. Again, this week's episode features music by Jail titled Everyone's Hip. You can check them out at SubPop.com. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of the FitCast. This is episode number 178. I'm Kevin Larrabee, and along with me is Dr. Jonathan Fass of AcceleratedStrength.com. What's up, John?
Nothing, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Spectacular. Just glad that I was able to just get you on the phone and I haven't been talking to you for an hour and a half.
Awesome.
And we also have Lee Peel of LeePeel.com and the podcast.
Oh, I do that a lot, people. Yeah. No, it's just me. It's just me. All right, let's just carry on. That was like my worst introduction ever, but let's move forward.
And that's what we're going to do because we have quite a bit of a jam-packed show for you this week. The first thing that we're going to quickly mention is that Todd Durkin is going to be coming up in a little bit. We're going to be talking to him right before we get into the mailbag. Fantastic interview with Todd. I think you guys are really going to like it. Very inspiring stuff. I dare you to not go right to the gym after listening to it because that's exactly what you're going to want to do. Also, some upcoming interviews that we have. I recorded an interview with Dr. John Berardi that we're going to be having for next week's show, as well as an interview with John Romanello that will be coming the week after that. And this Sunday, I'm going to be recording interviews with Brian St. Pierre, BrianStPierreTraining.com. And also, I'm going to be talking with Cassandra Forsyth about training during pregnancy and also nutrition during pregnancy, which should be really cool. And then after that, we have Martin Rooney coming up. So that's all stuff that's going to be recorded in the next week. So I need you guys to send in your questions for any of those guys to questions@thefitcast.com. You can also go to the contact us section of thefitcast.com, or you can send in a voicemail. Please, guys, send in some voicemails, 978-633-3488, and we're going to get those on the air. We have the software all purchased. I got the computer fired up, so we're all set to accept voicemails. So please feel free to send those in. And like I mentioned before, if you send in a voicemail and you're not 100% happy with it, just send in another one and say, hey, Kevin, use this one. Don't use the last one. I messed up on the last one. You know, I'll be able to figure it out. Next, in regards to guests, again, if you guys have someone that is, you know, a CrossFit expert or someone that you think would be a really good guest to talk about CrossFit with, please send me an email at kevin@thefitcast.com. And if you could just give me their name or their website, or if you have their email, that would be even better. And just kind of give me some ideas to where to go with this, because I'll be the first one to say that I'm very, I'm not very well versed in the CrossFit field. So I would like to, you know, see who you guys out there who do follow CrossFit, you know, who's the go-to person for this. Next, I want to quickly mention the blogs that are going on at kevinlarrabee.com. Got a cool article up there on 3 reasons why we are getting fatter, something like that, where you get to learn all about this awesome new thing from IHOP, where they take a piece of cheesecake, they put pancakes on both sides, and they top it with fruit and whipped cream. And also this other thing that involves biscuits, gravy, eggs, and sausage, which is awesome. Right?
Yes.
I'm gonna send you one of those, John.
I would love for you to.
Hopefully it will stay, won't get too soggy. And I hope you've checked out thefitcast.com lately, because we have a brand new website layout. We also have a player right on the side of the website. So if you want to, like, say if you're at work and you can't get access to iTunes, all you have to do is go to the right side of the website and you can listen to the podcast right from there. We also do recommend that you do subscribe through iTunes, because that's usually the quickest way to get it. You'll notice that sometimes I actually put up the podcast 1 or 2 hours before on iTunes, as I do on the main website, because I have to do the certain feed that iTunes needs before I actually post the show notes and everything up on the website. So if you really want to get the show first, that's going to be the way to get it. And we always are appreciative of any kind of reviews or telling your friends to subscribe through iTunes as well. That helps us out quite a bit, and we really appreciate it. And last but not least, again, as always, you can send in those voicemails to 978-633-3488, or you can just send an MP3 of your question to questions@thefitcast.com. We got through that pretty quickly.
Yeah. That was rocking.
Yeah, let's take a quick break, and we're going to be right back with an awesome mailbag for you, so stick around.
As you probably realized, I was lying. We're not going to get a mailbag right now. We're going to talk to Todd Durkin first, then we're going to get into the mailbag. So please, still stick around.
Right now, with Todd Durkin, he is an internationally recognized strength and speed and conditioning coach, personal trainer, and motivational speaker. He's produced over 26 DVDs and conducts motivational and educational workshops worldwide. He's the founder of Fitness Quest 10 in San Diego, California, an 8,000 square foot cutting edge health and human performance center providing outstanding service in personal training, strength and conditioning, therapeutic massage and body work, Pilates, yoga, and nutrition. He's also the head of the Under Armour Performance Training Council, and he has a BS in kinesiology and an MA in biomechanics and sports medicine. He was a 2005 ACE Personal Trainer of the Year and the 2004 IDEA Personal Trainer of the Year as well. And I've been talking about him on the show the last couple of weeks. He came and talked to us at Mike Bull Strength and Conditioning. I got to see him perform better. And now, Todd, I get to talk to you in person and on the show. It's a huge pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Kevin. It's great to be here. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, the first thing I want to talk about is kind of training and training atmosphere, because one of the things that we talked about with a staff meeting when you talked with our staff is just, you know, creating a proper atmosphere for people to train in. And I was wondering if you could talk about just your approach to training first in general when it comes to your personal training and athletes, and also then training atmosphere, how you kind of set the tone.
Yeah. Now, thanks for asking for that. It's something that's really near and dear to my heart on this, Kevin, is just creating a world-class culture. Regardless of where you train, you know, I try to set a culture here at Fitness Quest 10. We are located in San Diego at my facility, trying to constantly just focus on improvement of our culture and what can we do to create an environment that is positive, it's energetic, it's exciting, it's dynamic, and people often comment how they feel that energy. And it's so much of this is about energy and you know, the daily walks of life. I mean, most people, I mean, they're sitting all day, they're working all day, their lives are stressed, they've got a lot of things going on. So I believe that training and conditioning, regardless of, you know, where you do it, is, you know, it's playtime, it's your sanctuary. And, you know, for me, I try to create a facility that fosters that. And my encouragement would be, regardless of where any of your listeners are located around the country, is, man, you got to get your mind right, and you got to treat yourself and your body as world class. I mean, just as an athlete, a pro athlete, you know, striving to be world class, everyone has to strive to be world class. And I believe the conditioning helps you do that, and the environment and the whole system that you set up, whether it be in your home gym, at the gym in which you train at, the gym that you possibly own, whatever it is where you train, make that the best place to be all day.
And you, one of the cool things that you also mentioned is, and it really, you know, came out of the blue, but you said sometimes when you got to go into the gym and you just got to go in, you know, not necessarily have a plan, just go in and have fun and kind of play with the toys.
Well, yeah, we need to play. I mean, yeah. You know, kids nowadays, I mean, they don't play like we used to play years ago. We've lost the play element. And as adults, we've lost the play element. So many times, I mean, one of my mantras, even with our elite athletes, is play today, guys. Let's play. Let's have some fun. Let's loosen up and let's play and get after it. I mean, we want to work hard. We want to condition. And I believe that, you know, the programs that we use are really important. I mean, obviously, I don't want to underemphasize the importance of a good program. Mm-hmm. But when you're going through your workout and your program, some of us are so methodical and calculated in everything we do that we lose sight of the fact of just the play element. And, I don't know. It's a big thing that is kind of close to my heart is let's play, let's laugh, let's smile, let's have fun, let's create a positive energy, and let's work our tails off. Because when you work your tail off and you burn off the stress and you get the cortisol, you know, basically out of your system because of the stresses going out and you feel great, well, now your mind's right. And when your mind is right and you're conditioned physically, now your body and your mind are in a whole different ballgame. So when you leave the gym or you leave your little workout space wherever you're doing it, then you can go be a better spouse, a better employee, employer, a better friend, a better spouse, whatever it is, it improves the quality of your daily living. And I think that's why it's important that the environment in which we train at, that we go after it hard and that we just get our minds right. We get our bodies right.
Nutrition is obviously a huge component for our athletes and our clients. How do you go about addressing that subject at Fitness Quest 10?
Yeah. No, it's a great question because I always tell people, heck, I mean, they could train with, you know, me or any of our 35 staff members and they can do that every day of the week and they're going to feel good and they're going to feel better and they're going to see some results. But if they do not make any marked changes in their nutrition, if they're not where they're supposed to be, they're not going to get the kind of results they want, especially when you're talking like changing body composition, like inches and fat and you know, weight loss, all that stuff that sometimes, well, most people want to change. So how do we address it? I mean, I'm pretty fortunate. We've got a gal here on staff named Heather Fleming. She does something called Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, FDN. It's pretty cool. A lot of my folks will see her. And what that is, beside the traditional kind of nutritional analysis that she can do, is we actually do a lot of testing for people's hormone levels. If they've got things like they've been stuck losing weight and they're, you know, doing all the things they're supposed to be doing and they're not, well, the FDN testing, they'll do a saliva or they'll do a urine test, and it will tell them if there's any, you know, parameters that are out of balance, and then she can supplement them on anything that she's supposed to. So that's my first point is the FDN, the Functional Diagnostic Nutrition, is how we often address it here. And the good thing is anyone, I mean, we have clients and athletes that come from all over the country. She works with folks from all over the place because, you know, you get sent a box and that's what she does. So that's cool on that side of things. The second thing, obviously, is just all of our trainers. I mean, we've got Pilates and we've got strength conditioning coaches. We got personal trainers. All of our folks, including the massage therapists, they stay on our clients from an accountability standpoint. I mean, sometimes we just got to get back to the basics, you know, things like eating breakfast and making, you know, better choices and eating fresher foods and just staying away from the processed foods and the artificial sweeteners and drinking more water. I mean, the basic things that we all know we should be doing, but we just need the daily reminder because we get lazy and we get slack. So I think our staff does a nice job in keeping our folks motivated and accountable for that aspect. So, I mean, that's how we address it, Kevin, here at FQ10 is, you know, we've got a nutritionist, Heather, and if you want more information on her, you go to consciousnutrition.com, consciousnutrition.com, or if you go to our site, fitnessquest10.com, fitnessquest10.com, you can find out more about, you know, Heather or any of our programs, including nutrition, right there on our website as well.
And you talked about getting your mind right, and I have to ask you, as a motivational speaker, you know, what can the people listening do to kind of get their mind right so that, you know, they start off the day positive and they kind of keep it going throughout the day? Because right now for you, it's 6 p.m., and it sounds like you just woke up. Like, you still got that energy flowing. Like, what
Absolutely.
Can people do?
Get inspired, man. I always say, you ain't inspired, you're going to be tired. If you're tired, you're not inspired. So you got to get inspired. You got to find the inspiration. You know, there's a lot of things, and I'll first give my newsletter a plug. If you're not on my newsletter now, I would encourage you to sign up just once a month on the 10th of every month, Fitness Quest 10, 10 is a special number. On the 10th of every month, I give out this motivational email, just a newsletter, and it's full of great information. Again, just go to our website, and you can sign up for that. And one of the reasons I say that is because I believe it is important to continually surround yourself with positive mindset folks. You know, some of the things that I would recommend is reading daily motivational quotes. I mean, right before this call I was putting together, I've got hundreds and hundreds of quotes that I read. I post them up in my home office. I put them on the bathroom mirror. I basically fortify and strengthen my mindset all the time. Those are important things that I believe all of us could do better. You know, what do I do on a daily basis? I think, number one, I get up early. I mean, my routine is what I do is I get up early and I have what I call a holy hour. And my holy hour is the time where I get my mind right. And whether you choose to, on your holy hour, to read a good book, to pray, to meditate, to have quiet time, I find the solitude in the morning before my three kids get up, you know, whether it be 5 or 6 o'clock in the morning, get some time, your holy hour. And maybe your holy hour is only 10 minutes long, but having that time in the early morning to me helps set my mind right, because it helps me focus in on you know, just spiritually what I need to, you know, focus on that day. Other things, reading good books. I'm a believer that we should continually read good books. It helps keep our mind right. Surround yourself with positive people. I conduct mastermind groups for personal trainers, and one of the reasons why I do that and there are folks involved in that besides just kind of giving business wisdom and advice is so that we as a profession can stay positive so that we can continue to forge our own paths as well. Getting a massage once a month. I love getting my massage and body work, even for me personally. I try to do at least once a month of just taking that hour off to get, you know, my mind right, to get my body right. They go hand in hand. Obviously, the whole juxta of this is if I'm not working out or you're not working out, your mind's not going to be right. Mm-hmm. So you got to train hard. If you want to challenge yourself, you got to train hard. Now, training hard, obviously, depending on who you are, if there's things going on, you may have to modify or change some things up. But there's nothing like training hard. And training hard might mean 20 or 30 minutes. It might mean 40 to 50 minutes. But whatever it is, when you train, try to stay focused on your training, and that will help get your mind right. So I'd say, Kevin, those are some of the things that I do, you know, conditioning all the time. I start off my mornings with some quiet time and prayer time and just getting my mind right because, you know, I think called the yin and the yang, you know, in the quiet morning, it kind of sets the whole solitude and it helps get the mind right so that when I come in here and I'm fired up, I feel good and you know, between the exercising, between the eating right and treating my body like a high octane, you know, performance vehicle, then I can perform at the levels that I want to, which is going to be world class. My encouragement to all of the listeners would be treat yourself that same way. I was talking earlier to someone, which is kind of funny, is sometimes we treat like our pets better than we treat ourselves, right? You know, I've got an 11-year-old dog and we treat our pets so well. Well, some of us need to treat ourselves as well as we treat our pets. Like, we need to get our more workouts, and we need to walk more. We need to eat higher-grain food and high-octane stuff. So those are just some of the insights, Kev, that I do and that I encourage to all of you know, the people that I work with to continue getting their mind right.
The day after you said, you know, having some personal time in the morning, I just started literally I used to wake up and I would – and you said to never do this, just wake up, I'd stumble over to the computer and I would start looking at my email. But now I just instead put on the headphones, I listen to some music for 10 or 15 minutes and I'm like fired up. I'm ready to go.
Yep.
It's huge.
Yep. No, it's a great point on that. I mean, I mean, I've been guilty of it. I learned the hard ways in some ways of, like, you know, if you stay up late at night and let's say you're writing, I'm in the midst of a very big writing project right now, and I've got to protect my energy because what happens is it's easy if you finish your writing, let's say at 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, and you just get off the computer or whatever time, and you just roll into bed, well, it's going to affect the quality of your sleep. Mm-hmm. And when you're not sleeping good, your energy can't be right. So what I always recommend, too, is that you take like a 30-minute window at the end of the evening that you don't just roll from the computer and go right into your sleep, because the electromagnetic waves that a computer or a television generate can affect the quality of your REM sleep, which affects the quality of your recovery, which therefore your energy levels won't be as high as you want them the next day. And likewise, then if you get up and you roll before you can even open up your eyes and you get right back on the computer, mm-hmm. Well, then you kind of lose sight of who you are and you don't have the same energy levels. I believe when we protect our spiritual life and we gather our energy and we focus on getting some quiet time and listening to our bodies and our minds and our spirits, I think then we can focus much more productively when we are working over writing, over training our clients, or you're doing whatever you do respectively. So the late evening routine and the early morning routine, I believe, cannot be overlooked as far as just getting your mind right, getting your energy right, and feeling great.
Robert Kirkland had a question for you. He said that he wanted to know if you still train any former athletes who are now in their 40s. Having played football both in college and briefly in Canada, I've had to change the way I train dramatically by using a TRX, Valsides, etc. My question is, what is his approach to this demographic, especially if they are not pre-existing injuries or limitations? Thanks, and really enjoy the podcast.
Great question from Robert there. That's the majority of my business in our business at Fitness Quest 10 is that as we speak here on the phone, Kevin, I'm looking out over the floor. I've got a class going on with about 15 folks in that class, and the majority of those people are probably between 35 and 55 years old. And most of those people have something going on, some ache and pain, you know, with their knees or their backs, something, you know, which they're working on. So a big portion of our business that we work with is the average Joes and Janes that are trying to do, I always call it train the Joes like the pros.
Mm-hmm.
Less than 10% of our business is actually working with the pro athlete. And although we work with, you know, several, you know, recognizable names and people, that's not who we are, and that's not a, you know, the only folks that we work with is the athlete. I believe there's an athlete in all of us, and I believe the way we train, the methodology in which we train, actually are the same. So as I see folks right now banging ropes against the floor and doing medicine ball rotations and twists and squat jumps and lunge hops and throwing medicine balls into rebounders and doing all the TRX work as I literally sit and watch here as we speak, the methodology is the same. I think what happens is you get into your 40s, and those of you that are in your 40s or above, as the recovery time tends to diminish on that, and I believe we need to start making sure we stretch more in the flexibility and that we're doing supplementation like fish oils and flaxseed and those types of things, you know, the MSM, glucosamine, chondroitin, those types of things so that we can recover more efficiently and better. I love that. It's a great question on that. I hope I answered that enough there. And if there's pre-existing injuries or limitations, I think listen to your body. I think it's important that, you know, if it's tired or it's fatigued, then fight through it and train hard. If something hurts, don't do it. I mean, we're fortunate here. We have physical therapists and chiropractors on staff and on board that help our clients. And if you don't have access to that, well, then find a good one in your area. And find someone that can diagnose a condition or work around it. There's a lot of qualified fitness professionals nowadays that can work with a physical therapist or a chiro or a physician and work around your injury. Because you're hurt doesn't mean that you need to be on the bench. What it means is you need to create a program that, number one, can help get rid of or eliminate possibly the root of why you're in pain, and then also work around that as well. Some people come in and say, well, I've got knee issues and I can't do this. Well, let's find out why you have knee issues. And is it coming from, you know, your feet? Is it coming from, you know, tight hips, like a hip internal rotation deficit? Because typically, you know, if you look at the kinetic chain of the body, and that's just, you know, if you look at the ankles, the knees, the hips, the lower backs, the shoulders, the elbows, and the wrists, and the kinetic chain up the body, a skilled trainer or therapist can often, you know, generate some great information and great programming to help you eliminate pain and work around pain so that you can train at an appropriate intensity level and get your mind right and get your body right.
Let's talk a little bit about conditioning. Clement wanted to ask, what kind of interval training and conditioning do you subject your athletes to in order to get them game ready? And I think the same question could be posed towards your everyday person, your fat loss clients as well.
Amen, man. Amen, Clement. Great question. I like the use of the word subject your athletes to it. Sounds like they're being punished.
Yes.
Subject your athletes to it. We subject our clients and our athletes. We push them at maximum appropriate levels. And I guess what we do is in our programming, I mean, just to give you kind of in a nutshell of what we do, obviously when people come in, they do their foam rolling and then they do their warm-up and they get the dynamic warm-up and joint integrity, and we have obviously strength and conditioning as a big part of it. I use a lot of varied techniques. We do a lot of high-intensity interval training. We do a lot of supersetting. To create that high intensity environment. Drop sets. I love drop sets as part of people's programs. We do some eccentric training. Traditionally, it's called negative training. I don't like the word negatives. Why is it negative? No, it's not negative. It's positive. So I call it just eccentric, which scientifically is eccentric, meaning slower than gravity, and complex training. Complex training for the non-trainers out there is simply combining a strength exercise with a plyometric exercise. So therefore, you're going to have a strength plus a speed, which is power. So when we're doing, you know, what kind of interval training condition do you subject your athletes to get them ready? Again, we're trying to get our folks ready all the time for the daily fight of life. I mean, every day we're preparing for battle. And again, what it means to just coming out and being a better father or mother for your kids when you walk home at 7 o'clock, or to have a better day if you're finishing your training at 6:30 in the morning, whatever it may be. I believe that when you combine, you know, this type of training, again, that high-intensity interval training, which includes supersets, drop sets, negatives, not all at once, obviously, but we do mix it up. We do diversify. You know, the athletes always say this all the time. Like, I think one of the reasons why they come to coaches like ourselves is because they get bored and stale if they do the same thing all the time as well. So, you know, the regular Joes and Janes, you got to mix it up. You got to have fun. You got to continually challenge your body in new ways. Two arms, one arm, two-legged, one-legged, working with chopping from high to low, low to high rotations, training the body in the 3D fashion that it was designed to move in a very dynamic environment. So that's kind of what we focus on and train the body in. And to answer Clement's question, which is a good one, we try to push people to the maximum level that they can for that day. And we monitor that via heart rate, and we monitor that via, you know, talk tests and everything else. But I want to see people sweating. I want to see people out of breath. I want them to see like they can't talk to me, even though they probably want to or don't want to. I don't know. But I want to see them huffing and puffing. So when they leave, they feel unbelievable. They feel world class. They feel like they've been just put through a world class workout.
Now, let's talk a little bit more about the exercise that you guys do there. And I'm going to ask you kind of a personal question. But, you know, if you could only pick, let's not only say three exercises, but just a handful of exercises that you could do with a client, what would they be?
So a handful of, I only had a few exercises to choose from?
Well, I guess a better way to put it, what are your favorite exercises?
I'm going to stick to the basics,
yep.
And it's probably boring, but let's say I'm on an island and I don't have a lot of stuff. I love push-up variations, like even doing like lizard crawls, which is like a crawl, like kind of like an old school bear crawl. And, you know, those old football players that are listening, you know, but it's kind of like you're doing a push-up with that. So any kind of a push-up, I love push-up variations, you know, T push-ups, you know, lizard push-ups, eccentric push-ups. So I'm going to say push-ups. The second is lunges. I love lunges, basic, but the best. Why? Because we can do forward lunges, we could do diagonal lunges, we could do side lunges, we could do a reverse lunge with a reach over top. The body, I love lunges. And you can use medicine balls, you know, you can use body weight, you can use vests, whatever you want. So I've got my upper body push, I've got my lower body with the lunge, and my third one, and I'm on an island, I'm going to go with... I'm traveling with my TRX, so I'm going to go with a TRX row and curl combination. I love the TRX. I love I love the row curl combination with the TRX. I start that with all of our folks, regardless of level. I have my pro athletes do that. I have my beginners do that, because you just simply adjust your angle in which you're pulling, you know, you're rowing on this particular movement. You're rowing the TRX, and it's just you're pulling body weight. I love the little superset there of the row and the bicep curl combination. So I've got my pull, I've got my push, I've got my lower body, and I'm going to get some core action with the TRX. And if I'm really getting crazy, I'll probably go with some kind of a squat, jump, lunge, hop combination, which is great conditioning, where I'm going to do, let's say, 4 squat jumps right into 4 lunge hops. Then I go right into 5 squat jumps, 5 lunge hops, no rest, 6 squat jumps, 6 lunge hops. And I'm going to see how many I can do before I have to stop. I like that little combination. Try that and see if you can get to, like, oh, man, if you can get, like, more than 10, you're doing great. but most people aren't getting beyond 10. If you're at 15, then you're cranking through that. So I got my little plyometric in there, and then probably some type of core, obviously. Maybe it's a side plank with a rotation. Maybe it's just a regular plank, or maybe it's some kind of a BOSU. I like the BOSU stuff. As well, man, you only gave me a couple, but if I'm on an island, I brought my TRX, I may have to bring my Superband and do some Superband chops. Now I'm getting carried away. Superband chopping, low to high, high to low, Superband rotations. And with that, I got a full workout. I'm sweating. I need my water at that point.
Well, I got to ask you, you know, you mentioned traveling. What do you generally take with you when you go traveling? Or do you even think, you know, I'm going to get my activity, I'm going to get my exercise just by getting out there, you know, going out on the beach or just like going for a hike? Like, what do you do?
That's a great question. And you know, I teach boot camps, which I've been teaching now for 12 years, boot camps. I do a lot of corporate programs where I go into companies and I teach corporate boot camps and team building type programs. And I'm also traveling a lot now myself. And one thing that I find with traveling, and for anyone listening that is traveling a lot, it's really hard when you're on the road in several different capacities. Number one, eating. Nutrition's hard when you're traveling because you're eating out, so you got to really prepare. And then you got to get your workouts in. Even if you're going different time zones and you're jet lagged, the workouts will help keep you on track. I typically travel with a TRX and a Superband. If I'm not going to a fitness show or a place that's going to have that, I know that, I'm gonna travel with the TRX and the Superband because they're light and they can pack in my nice Under Armour bag real easily on that stuff. And with that, with body weight, a TRX and Superband, I got everything I need to get in a solid workout. I could hang that around a tree, a pole. You know, Superbands can wrap around anything. So with that, I've got some resistance, I've got body weight, and I'm ready to roll.
The next question that we have comes from Farley. He asks, Todd, I've heard a few of your interviews in the past and watched some of your YouTube content. All great stuff. You're a huge inspiration of mine. Plus, I love football, so that's cool too. So my question, I've heard you talk about being mindful and how the mind-body connection is overlooked in strength conditioning world. I was wondering if you could elaborate on this and how it relates to your average personal training clients versus the athletes that you work with. As a father and husband with a desk job, I work to keep my thoughts positive, stay focused, and maintain health amidst the daily grind of commuting, sitting in front of the computer, and managing my stress of my job. I eat whole foods and nutritious foods. I lift 2 to 3 days a week, try to get my sleep, nine month old baby in the house, and try to keep active. Life doesn't always allow me to have private time. I seek with my workouts, which helps me to stay centered and balanced mentally. What are some of the ideas you would follow personally or give to other non-athletes that are clients who are juggling busy lives and trying to make time for it all? Thanks.
Yeah, Farley, man, I hear you, man. It sounds like my life. I got the 3 kids. I'm balancing out. The 9-month-old, man, that's a whole different story. That's tough. I hope you're getting some sleep there. You know what? It sounds like you're doing everything you're supposed to be doing, Farley. It's called life. I think we've got to get over this myth of what's called balance. I mean, everyone's like, I'm striving for balance. Well, you know what? The only time we balance is when we're like 6 feet under the ground because we're dead. It's everything is equilibrium. I think what Farley's doing is exactly what most of us are doing. He's committing to an exercise routine as consistently as possible, 2 to 3 times a week. If you can grab another, you know, 1 or 2 days in there a week, it's ideal. Doing the best to eat, you know, good foods and trying to sleep right and manage your time as best you can. I think the things that are most important, and Farley, I mentioned this earlier on, and don't want to be redundant, but I think it's important. Motivation is like brushing your teeth. You got to do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, your energy will wane. The sleep's important, the eating's important, the exercise's important. It's absolutely critical that we do those things. We got to train hard. But because you've got kids, because you're balancing out all this different stuff or trying to, I think it is important that you try to get up a little bit earlier. I don't know what time you rise up, but maybe getting up and getting that quiet time for 10 minutes or 30 minutes where you can just focus on yourself. I think it's important that you continually surround yourself with positive people in the work environment and everything else you're doing. If you drive to work and you commute, how about listening to books on tape instead of just listening to the radio? Positive books on tape. I love that. The average American drives about 250 to 320 hours a year in the car. So between 250 to 320 hours a year are spent driving. Imagine if even half of that time was spent listening to great books that were motivational, spiritual, something on leadership, something about relationships. Think of the better energy and the more wisdom you'd have if you read, 50 more books a year or you listened to them. So that's a way that you can help your mindset and better use your own time, the thing that most of us are lacking or struggle with on that. So those would be some of the things that I would recommend to Farley. I would congratulate Farley on, number one, being aware that he's trying to be more mindful. And it starts with awareness. I mean, so we're already there on that side of things. That's what I do, though. I'm aware of it, and I do my best every day to get my quiet time in the morning to at least 4 days a week, try to train, hard, and then to do my best to eat well. And I know what times. I'm very focused with my time. Like, I know in early mornings my schedule. I know also after the kids go to bed at 8 o'clock, I know that's my time between 8 p.m., and then depending on what kind of project I've got working on up until possibly up to midnight, if I'm working on a project, those are times that I can get quality work done as well. And, of course, if you're married and you have a relationship, then you want to spend some time with the loved one also. So I'm fortunate enough that I've got a supportive wife and Melanie that really supports me and understands, what it's like. And I think communication, obviously, with any of this is important also. That's kind of it in a nutshell how I'd answer to Farley on that, Kevin, but it's a great question. I think it brings up a greater point how most of us are trying to balance success, right? We're trying to be successful trainers or entrepreneurs or people that are working to create some time freedom and money freedom. And I think every day the key is to focus on what we can do. I call it here, what can you do today to be 1% better? Focus on today to what you can do to be 1% better today. If we think about all of the what ifs, it's overwhelming. And it gets sometimes, it can develop anxiety and fear and all the things because it's scary sometimes to think, oh, my God, 5 years down the line. I'm not saying that we should not have the plan because I'm a huge believer in having a one-year plan, a five-year plan, and a 10-year plan. But the daily focus that it takes to be 1% better, your things to do list on these, have your most important five things that you have to do today in order to make this a winning day, to make it a world-class day. Who do you have to call? What do you have to do? And put down those five things. Now, your list may have 10 or 15 things on it, but make sure you start five things. So by the time that you leave at the end of the day, those five things are done, then it's going to be a winning day. And that's what we're trying to do is every day, if we can get 1% better, then we're going to create championship lives and we're going to create a world-class lifestyle so that we can be healthier, happier, and obviously have more harmony.
Todd, let's wrap up just quickly talking about if our listeners out there want to get some more info on you or check out some more of your stuff, where would be the best places to go for that?
Thanks for asking on that. There's several ways. First off, my website, fitnessquest10.com, fitnessquest10.com. You can check out all that information. And again, I do encourage everyone to get on the newsletter list and look at that. Also, I have a Twitter account and a Facebook. So if you do the the Twitter and the Facebook thing. Search Todd Durkin and become a friend on Facebook or follow us on Twitter. And, you know, even with the Twitter stuff, I try to do several times a week, put out some motivational quotes on that and manage that stuff also. I'm not saying that you should spend, you know, hours upon hours every day on those Facebook and Twitter things because we're all busy. But if you limit your time and you focus on that, that's one aspect that we do. I love to tweet, you know, if I'm on traveling or I'm on the road or I'm here and I've got some guys going, you know, we'll tweet and get some things, you know, just kind of let people know what's happening. So between the newsletter on our website, between Facebook and Twitter, I think that would be it. And of course, I welcome anyone that's ever in the San Diego area to come on over and take a look at us at Fitness Quest 10. We're just about 20 minutes north of downtown. We love to have, you know, a lot of fun here at our center. And we've got a wonderful staff of people. And if it's a trainer that's listening in, obviously I'm on, you know, the speaking tour with Perform Better. I'm all over the country with those guys. You can follow us at some of the other events that we're doing as well. And we do have a calendar, fitnessquest10.com. And also we have a corporate website. It's called toddurkin.com. Just if it's toddurkin.com. That's our corporate website, which has, you know, some more of the things I'm doing with the companies and that stuff as well. And that should be it, Kevin, as far as the contact information. I guess my plea with everyone would be, you know, get your mind right, continue to train hard, you know, read good books, you know, read quotes, and every day continue to strive to be your best. And when you do that, I believe that you find purpose. And when you find purpose in your life, that drives passion. And when you have purpose, when you have passion, that's living a life that's inspired. And when you have an inspired life, that's leading to an extraordinary life. And I believe most of the people that are listening to this call right now, the fact that you're listening tells me that you are trying to be extraordinary. So I congratulate you, and I thank you for spending the time with me and Kevin here on this call to try to get to the next level. It's what it's all about.
Yeah, thank you so much, Todd. And for people who, you know, you might be listening to this in the car, you might still be in the gym, I'll make sure to post all those links in the show notes. So if you happen to get home and you want those links, just look in the show notes. I'll have links for the Twitter, the Facebook, and also ToddDurkin.com and Fitness Quest 10. And again, Todd, I want to thank you so much for coming on the show. It's been a huge pleasure, and I hope to have you on again sometime in the future.
Great, Kevin. I appreciate your help, and congratulations on all that you're doing with the FitCast, man. So if there's anything I could do to help you out, please don't hesitate to ask. Other than that, my man, peace and God bless.
Well, thank you so much, Todd.
Thank you.
Okay, it's time for the mailbag, but first I have to do a little self-promoting because right before we recorded the podcast, we got a little bit of info that the Virgin Mobile article that I was doing is now live. So if people want to check that out, you can go to luv.virginmobileusa.com. That's just their online magazine. It's like LUV as in love, spelled incorrectly. I hope they caught that. It's a joke. Laugh, guys. Don't make me put in the laugh track. Come on.
I like that. Yeah, I think that we should have a FitCast laugh track.
That will be here next week. So love.virginmobileusa.com. And if you look under the passion tab on the bottom, you will see a pretty cool interview. And I think some of the stuff will be relevant for people out there. And maybe you guys can get something from it as well. So I hope you like it and let me know what you think. But the first question that we have is going to go right towards you, Lee. It's from Lori. She says, I really like the podcast, but I have a request. I'm a runner biker first and weightlifter second. I enjoy all the weight talk, but would love to have an actual runner biker triathlete on the show. Someone who trains for running but lifts weights to stay fit. Not someone who lifts first and runs a little to stay in shape. The general impression I get from the show is that you all hate running and don't suggest anybody do it, so it would be great to hear a more balanced approach. Just a thought. Maybe I am way off. Thanks for all the great work.
This was on the outline, just to kind of give some background. This was on the outline last week. And it's actually one of the reasons I wrote a blog post that I wrote this week about running. But basically, and I think both the guys can jump in on this with me as well. I don't hate running, and I don't have any beef with running, though I don't do it myself unless being chased. But it's more about, as trainers, we have to pick the best risk to reward ratio. And everybody can do some form of resistance training. For the most part, I'm very generally speaking, but most people can do a form of resistance training, be it body weight, mobility work, things like that. Not everyone should be running. Running is actually a very complex movement to do that to your body over and over and over again. And to not take it as seriously as a sport is problematic and often causes a lot of injury. So I do think that you're absolutely right that we should have more experts in running and biking and things like that, so that there can be more conversation for that. But as far as, I guess, my conversation wants to go more towards the aspect of, you know, we hate it or we don't support it or we need a more balanced approach. We're giving the best generalized information that we can to a population that may or may not have any level of conditioning. And running, in my opinion, is a very advanced form of training to do repetitively, at least in an endurance sense, not so much in a short-term sense. And I can't find a lot of people that I've ever worked with that, just starting off, they are prepared to do running without facing a lot of injuries first off. So it's just more about what is fitting to the general population more, and weight training, resistance work, mobility work, things like that, more low impact cardio options or interval options are just easier to implement with a larger population. So that's where I come from. And Kevin and John can jump in, but that's where I'm coming from. And if you want to read more about my thoughts on running for fat loss and our weight condition or weight training in that aspect, then you can go and check out the blog. But yeah,
I'm with Lee on this. I just, in terms of running, it's more or less, I just don't like to run. I used to run a lot, like in high school, but I don't think my body can take it anymore. My hips are messed up. John.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, no, I agree too. I mean, I think we also probably come from exactly what Lee alluded to, which is like people tend to run for weight loss. If we're just talking about an argument of weight loss, there's probably better ways, or even better ways to run in order to do that. If we're just talking about running as a sport, then I thought Lee made a really good point. It's a sport. So you should be prepared for the activity that you're going to engage in. And I think that's where we tend to come from. I think we would answer any question like that. If someone said, hey, I just started playing rugby to lose weight, we'd yes. say, well, that's great. That's a great activity, but let's make sure you're prepared to play rugby. You know, so I think anything like that, and maybe we sort of, because we're so used to these questions of, oh, I'm going to start running for weight loss, we just automatically perhaps go into this, well, why are you running type of thing. But I don't think any one of us, whether or not we run a little, a lot, whatever, have anything specifically against running. It's a great form of exercise, but respect it as exercise and as athleticism and sport, which means that there are things that you really should be doing to prepare your body for it. Something that Bill Hartman said a long time ago to me, which I think completely nails it, is just you don't run to get in shape. You have to be in shape to run, and I think that's very true.
Very good. Keep your eye on that Skype chat box.
Ah, why is that for me? Yeah, it is. Awesome.
So we're trying to increase the production value of this podcast by.
I didn't actually see it. You know, kind of. Bloop. Up, so I was completely not paying attention to it. Anyway, hey, FitCast crew, I'm sure this has been asked before, and if so, maybe you could refer me to the episode number that dealt with it so as to not duplicate a question, but it's about the TRX. I'm a student, and in the next year, we'll be moving from my apartment to my mother's basement in another city, and then back to either an apartment or share a townhouse with some roommates next year. God, that sounds like my life for the past like 10 years. except for my mom's basement. That's Kevin. Does the TRX system require much setup or space? I know I could probably just go to their website to see it, but I would like to know from firsthand experience how easy or difficult it is to set up or travel with, especially for someone like me who doesn't have long-term accommodations for the next few years. Thanks a bunch. That's from Linda.
Well, Linda, that's actually a pretty good question. I've talked a lot about the TRX in the past on the podcast, and it is something that I use in the garage, and it is sometimes tough to find room for it, and there's a couple things that you can do. They make an attachment that goes onto a door, so if you close the door and you then have it levered against the door, where you want to make sure that the door itself is going to be pulled against the frame. You don't want to be pulling it away from the frame, otherwise it's just going to pull the hinges right out of the wall. I mean, it's just to be safe, you want to make sure you do that. They also make permanent attachments that can go on the ceiling or the wall that just need to go into a stud. Otherwise, you just really need to find some place to hook it up, and you really just need as much room as for what you're going to be doing with it. I would think about a 10-foot circumference from the center of the TRX is going to give you plenty of room, and that's being super generous. You got to keep in mind the things that you're going to be doing are going to be probably rows, push-ups, core stuff, which will be very close to the ground, so it's going to be very much just up and down. You know, you might do some mountain climbers, some leg curls. You might do some biceps and triceps or some rear foot elevated stuff. So you're not going to need a ton of room. It's really not something to be too concerned about unless you're going to be in a very cramped space, something that isn't going to have very high ceilings, or if you can't find a door that is not directly against the wall. The issue with a door being directly against the wall is if you need to do anything side to side, it's going to be a little bit of an issue. But other than that, again, it's a great tool that you can use, and it doesn't take up too much room, and it breaks down very easily. So I would recommend going to their website, though. Go to fitnessanywhere.com and look at the anchoring options that they do have. Again, I think they're both about $20 a piece. Or if you really want to just go down to the hardware store, I'm sure you could make something that's just as good if you're willing to be a little creative with it. But yeah, I think I got that question. Have fun living in your mom's basement. It's a fun time. I'm not living in my mom's basement, to clarify. I live in my bedroom.
Oh.
In your mom's
house. Trying to move down to the basement, but they won't let me.
There's a cat issue.
There is a cat issue.
Cat issue.
So, Lou, want to grab the next question from Catherine.
And
Drew, John, Dr.
Okay. Guys, so sorry you skipped the other one.
I did.
Yeah, you did. So... Hello. I wanted to get the good doctor's opinion on a weird hip popping that I've recently noticed. It started when I went for a weekend run and ran 8 miles, a new personal record. My previous max was 6, so it was a bit of a push. Didn't feel much while I was running, but the next day my left hip was killing me. I limped around for 2 days and slowly started doing non-impact work, strength training, elliptical bike, etc. It got better, but since then I've noticed it popping occasionally, but particularly when I do one-legged deadlifts. If I put a few fingers on the hip joint and bend forward, I can feel the joint click or pop when I straighten back up. What did I do and how can I make it better? It doesn't hurt, but it doesn't seem right either. Thanks for your opinion, Catherine. John?
The first good thing is that it doesn't hurt. So generally speaking, we tend to ignore that from a clinical standpoint, because if it's not painful, then it's probably not something serious. But it's usually annoying. anything clicking or popping, it usually has something to do with the mechanics. So there's a tendon that's sliding over something that it shouldn't, and it kind of jumps. Or there might be some positional fault problem, whatever, in the joint itself. But who knows? How to fix that is tough, because you don't really know what you did, other than the only clue that we have is that you did something above and beyond what you usually do. So we can theorize that maybe you had some muscle soreness, some muscle strain, and when it kind of healed or went away, either you had changed the way that you were moving or walking, which I would assume is a pretty reasonable statement, because you were in pain, or when you started feeling better, I don't know, maybe you started overdoing it again. I don't know. But I think usually what happens is that you just kind of change the way you moved. So my best guess is that you've built in a little muscle dysfunction. Something's not working the way it used to. The mechanics are off. The easiest thing to do from an individual standpoint, you do foam rolling, soft tissue work in the area that can be affected, which could be the glutes, could be the hip abductors, could even be the adductors. I mean, it's a crapshoot because I can't really tell you exactly what's going on. The other thing that you could possibly do, you're talking about, you're basically flexing forwards, and then when you extend, you're getting this clicking. So we're looking at the hip extensors probably, although it could be the psoas, the hip flexor, but I would think hip extensors. So I think what you can try to probably do is make sure that you're doing glute bridges. You can even use a TheraBand around your knees while you're doing a glute bridge. And that's kind of like what's called muscle energy technique, where you use the muscles in an isometric way to affect the joint. The muscles will tighten up and in theory, what happens is it kind of realigns a joint if it's out of alignment. So that might be helpful. If it continues and it's really becoming annoying, I would always suggest to get a consultation from a physical therapist or something. But if it doesn't hurt, you should be okay for the time being. So hope that helped.
I can let us know how things turn out. If John can help you out anymore, feel free to email again. All right, Lee, I got a question for you. It's from Tim. He says, anyway, my question is, I wonder what your opinions slash experiences or those of the guests slash hosts were on the effectiveness of intermittent fasting and fasted workouts for lean muscle gains. I've been reading this blog at leangains.com, which charts his own success with an 8-hour feeding with a 16-hour fast approach. Any comments?
You know, when it comes to fasting and intermittent fasting, I believe that I've yet to find a better source of research and authority on it than Martin. I can't say that I've read as much as he has on fasting, because Martin, and I think that I've talked about this before on the podcast, I remember touching on it somewhat, but Martin is incredibly thorough. The whole reason he doesn't even have the book out yet is because he's being so thorough. And a lot of the general protocols are already on his website or his blog. His whole protocol does not, it's not just for fasted training. I just want to make that clear. He has multiple protocols set up. You can do fasted training. You can do pre-workout meals. You can do 2 pre-workout meals. There's a lot of options and alterings that you can do. I don't think that it is for everyone. I don't even think Martin would say that. Perhaps he would, but he could be an interesting guest to have on. I know some people that work very well with that kind of strategy, and I know some people that just did not work very well with that kind of strategy at all. And I think that it comes full circle back to doing what works for you. I think that it's a great topic of conversation to kind of break through the dogma of multiple meals or needing to have multiple meals a day to stroke your metabolism and those kind of classic faux pas that what we still hear talked about all the time. I think multiple meals is just a method, as is fasting is just a method. I think fasted training, in my opinion, is one of my probably least liked methods of training, simply because I don't feel that a lot of general people respond very well to it. And that's just been my anecdotal experience. Research points both positive and negative towards it. That kind of leaves you to a middle ground. Some do well, some don't do well, which is kind of what we generally see anyway. As far as is it good or is it bad, I think it's more the question, is it right for you as far as Martin or anything that you see on his website? Not to completely appeal to authority, but I think that you're at least in good hands as far as research goes. He's done a lot of good research on the topic, and just test it out and see how you do. And if you go to his blog, because I don't know how recently this question was written, But if you go to his blog, he recently updated with what he calls the Lean Gains Guide. And it's a very comprehensive and short overlook as to the different kind of methods that you can do. It was posted on April 24th, 2009, instead of just reading out the URL because it's quite long. But you can go to leangains.com to check that out. And yeah, I think that covers it. Just do your research and test it out and see how you feel. So did I get
on the little box that we have for Skype?
Yeah, I was about to read it, Kev. I was just making sure that Lee was done with her excellent answer. Cool. Or if you had a follow-up comment.
What do you think about fasting for building muscle, though, Lee?
Oh, yeah, I didn't see that.
Lee muscle gains.
Well, I mean, overall, like, I mean, fasting is, I mean, it's a method of nutrition rotation, if you will. You know, I think that it varies as to the level of training and the level of caloric intake that you're going to take in. From what I have read on the research, there seems to be some positives towards partitioning, and, you know, there seems to be some positive things that come from doing a fasting style system and then with eating and lifting and so on and so forth. And like I said, Martin's really definitely gone there. But I would be lying if I said that I knew it on the level that he did. My experience generally tends to be a more moderate approach and then testing out, you know, your methods. I can certainly see how you could have good, because he was talking about his lean gains. So this is like leaving away from the classic dirty bulk, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is from going into an approach of, I want to gain as much muscle mass as possible while trying to remain as lean as possible. I think Martin himself has been very efficient in doing that. How many people do I think that are going to be able to kind of follow that protocol and have the same type of success? I think it's one of those things that comes into play where you have to kind of look at the genetic state that a person is in. I don't think that it would be a complete lie to say that Martin's he's always been kind of relatively lean, and he's definitely gained muscle as being a lean person. How much is this going to work for someone who's trying to gain lean muscle without being at a very low body fat already? Not much. Most people have a problem getting to that low body fat level as it is. So I think that becomes an argument of bulking strategies, if you will. And bulking strategies are kind of along the board as fat loss strategies, though more complicated. I've written articles on realistic muscle gains, as has Alan Argon and I believe Martin Burkham. And you know, the amount of muscle that you can gain over a certain period of time is limited anyway. There isn't a lot of room for large amount of muscle mass without the use of steroids, drugs. And so if you're going to go at it, there's the kind of camp that argues you need to get every single bit of muscle you can. So if you're not eating enough for it, then you're going to miss out on muscle. So just bulk up and eat dirty, or eat as much as you can, or eat clean but eat in large amounts, etc. And then there's the other camp that says, oh, no, cycle, you know, do like, you know, fasted, and then, you know, do more strategic timing of your nutrition to maintain as much leanness as possible and keep the level of partitioning towards muscle as good as possible based upon your genetics. So I think it's just one of those arguments in which that you have to look at what you respond best to. A lot of people who are, say, a classic quote-unquote ectomorphs, or who have more of a tendency to be smaller, usually are going to generally underestimate their caloric intake need for muscle gain, because that's why they're kind of in that skinny or scrawny kind of category anyway. If you're in that category, you may be someone that benefits from more of a, you know, a heavier feed kind of strategy, or you may be more comfortable with a slow feeding kind of strategy. I mean, at the end of the day, it really does land on the depends thing again. I think the best thing that we can do is be realistic to how much muscle we can gain in a short amount of time without the use of drugs and with taking into account our genetics and our previous lifting states. But also, you know, be realistic about the aspect of lifting and the importance of overall calories is for that as well. Feeding strategies are just one part. The lifting and the overall caloric intake is important too. So I guess that hopefully that kind of answers the questions a little bit. But I mean, I definitely think it can be used. I just think it's just one of yet another strategy.
Yeah, we can definitely have Martin on too.
Yeah, and I think he'd be a good. I think he'd be a good guest for sure.
You got it. We'll definitely, John. I appreciate you pausing for the follow up.
You know,
and actually, you know what? I have one more follow up. You know, sorry.
Oh.
Whoa.
I don't. I mean, Lee. Whoa. When it comes to the fasting and stuff like that, does that mean like strictly, you know, nothing, or do people generally like use like BCAAs? And how do you feel about that?
Well, there's different methods because fasting, I mean, there's no one hard. It's not like you could be like, hey, do you fast? And everyone means the same thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's different clocks, if you will, or different feeding times. If I will quote from Martin Burke, just because the question was asked about Martin. He says, my general position is the fasting phase should last through the night and during the morning hours. Ideally, the fast should be broken by noon or shortly thereafter if you arise at 6 to 7 a.m. So he discussed kind of, you know, more of an 8 to potentially 16 hour fast, but it varies in those kind of things. And I think it depends on... I have seen a lot of research that isn't as favorable to one meal fasts, or to, longer fasting states, that the more length of time that's added or the shorter amount of eat duration seem to, you know, cause various issues. It seems to be that there is somewhat of a cherry spot for fasting. And, from what I've read, it seems that Martin is kind of landing on that cherry spot of fasting. Like I said, though, it's a lot of research. Fasting is a very, very big, there's a lot of library there to look at. So from what I have seen, I don't want to say my opinions are exactly the same as Martin's, but from what I have seen, I can certainly say that I follow along suit with a lot of what he says, and definitely think that he takes it to that level of furthering the research to that. He doesn't seem to have a lot of bias or just point to it because it seems to be good. But then again, you know, like I said, it's only what I know. But I do think that the window is important. You know, branched chain amino acids during your fasting state, I don't think that doesn't break the fast by any sense of the words. And I know some people use vitamins and certain supplementations during fasting times, but you can't eat anything, you know, you can't, that's the whole point. So, you know, there's only so much that you can intake and it'll defeat the purpose, you know.
Gotcha. All right, John, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kevin. Speaking of Kevin, what up, Kev, et al.? Just wondering what your guys' thoughts are on lifting with slow and controlled reps versus explosive or fast lifts. Is it as simple as one being better for fat loss and the other being better for muscle hypertrophy? To make the question more specific, I just got done with losing weight, about 80 pounds, and now I'm looking to stay as lean as I can in more of a maintenance-type routine. I've been reading articles and blogs that extol the physiological virtues of both lifting styles. Any suggestions or thoughts on them would be a huge help. Anthony, Kevin, what do you think about this?
All right, well, I'm going to hit this from two different perspectives. First off, you mentioned controlled reps versus explosive fast lifts. So lifting controlled, slow and controlled, I'm going to guess you're going to mean, you know, doing more like tempo type stuff, like three down, pause, then three up and stuff like that, or possibly some kind of eccentric work. And then we're explosive lifts, we mean like, you know, coming down and throwing it up as fast as safely, as safely as possible. And again, you know, you've heard before, that's kind of the hypertrophy versus strength, and speed. But I don't think that's necessarily the case. I think, you know, if you can lift a weight, and this is just my own personal taste, you know, if you can lift a weight faster than you currently are, then you should be throwing that weight up as fast as you safely can. And, you know, it's the first step of taking where you can make sure you can do the lift correctly. It's in a controlled environment. So you're not going to be doing, say, you know, I probably wouldn't like do walking lunges as fast as humanly possible. That was that'd be something you'd take a little bit more care with. But if you're bench pressing, you know, if you're doing pull-ups, pulling yourself up, doing the concentric motion as quickly as possible, as long as everything is relative and you're healthy and all that good stuff, I think that's the way to go. And you know, a great thing, I think it was Gray Cook that said it. You know, fast is smooth, smooth is fast. So everything that you do, you know, it should have relative speed to it, and it should look good. Like you should, you know, you see guys that are in the weight room that are throwing up weight super fast, and it looks like garbage. Like you'll see them bench, and for one rep, the bar will come down to their neck, and the next time that will come down to like to literally the bottom of their ribs, and it will come back, and maybe it will get towards the sternum, then it will just keep bouncing back and forth because they have no control. They have no motor control of the movement. So I would keep that in mind. And also the eccentrics, if you're someone that is still in somewhat of a fat loss phase and you're trying to put on muscle, the eccentrics are going to beat the crap out of you. You are going to be dead, especially if you're in some kind of caloric deficit. You're not going to be able to recover. You're going to be very smart when it comes to the programming for your training. And like I said, it is a big thing in taste, you know, like some, you know, if you want to lift heavy and you want to lift fast, I think that, I mean, personally, that's something that I like to do psychologically. I like to go into the gym, and if you're going to bench, you try to get that weight up as fast as humanly possible. And same thing with squatting or deadlifting, you know, you keep your proper form and then you try to get up as quickly and as fast as possible. And I think if you set up the sets and the reps correctly and you get your nutrition right, and if you, again, keep in mind the recovery and being cautious of the fact that you still say you want to stay lean, and you want to go in more of a maintenance type where you want to stay, I'm guessing, at the current body fat percentage that you're at, but looking to put on muscle, it's going to be hard. It's going to be slow. And, you know, it's going to be hard to see some of the results, you know, immediately. You got to be very patient with it. And again, you got to consider all those factors when it comes into it. And hopefully, again, just making sure you have some kind of a plan to make sure you go at it and you set yourself up for the most results possible, or the best results possible. But that's just my opinion. And I'm sure John and Lee could feel free to chime in as well. John, you haven't talked in a while.
No, I think the audience prefers that sometimes.
Never.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that it's if he's looking for a maintenance thing, I would keep it as a low volume kind of exercise. I don't know if it really makes a difference on the speed, honestly, because
let's talk about activating muscle fibers and neuromuscular activation. Better if he's lifting quick. I mean, people have talked about that in the past.
Yeah, I don't know that the speed of the lift, there's no evidence that I know of that
muscle
that
fiber
indicates
recruitment, things like that, type 2 muscle fibers,
right?
All that whole ballpark.
Right, and the muscle fiber recruitment, you'll recruit it with higher speeds, but you'll also recruit it with heavier weights, and I don't know that they really have any evidence that suggests that one is better than the other necessarily. Real-world examples of that are Olympic weightlifters lift, you know, heavy weights, but much lighter than like a powerlifter will, but both of them are exceptionally strong. So either way seems to get you to the same kind of place, and I just don't know that the research has been done that shows one is more effective than the other in recruitment. There's some evidence that suggests that, I mean, there's contradictory evidence. There's evidence that there's some limited evidence that lifting fast actually overrides slow fiber recruitment and directly recruits the fast twitch fibers through a neuromuscular adaptation. But I don't know that they've actually really decided whether or not that happens or not. On the other hand, it doesn't, you know, there's also the fatigue factor and all this kind of stuff. And the only thing about lifting fast, in my opinion, is if you're not training to be fast and if you're not really engaged in athletics, if you're just looking for a body composition kind of argument, then do you need to lift fast with the potential of increased injury risk factor that comes along with that, with, you know, lifting too quickly and not being in control of your weights or movement. So I don't know that I have really an argument for lifting quickly, and certainly not explosive lifting like the cleans and whatever. I don't know that the listener is talking about something like that, but I think it at least should be mentioned that if you don't have a purpose for lifting quickly, then I would ask, why are you including it into your program except for some kind of abstract thought of fiber recruitment, which can be done in other ways.
And just to throw in like a clarity point, I think it should be clarified just for general listeners that there's a difference between explosive and just a good rep tempo. You know, like it, my point being that like perhaps an explosive lift, no, but fast completing a rep in a controlled fast manner, that is generally speaking for the general person one of the better methods to go with. Mm-hmm. Or yeah, and I think that some people might hear that and it might be like, oh, so I should lift it slowly. I think that they might get that confused because they'll read into it the wrong. They'll read into it something that's all I'm trying to say.
Good point.
In a very unwell manner. That's what I said.
We get a follow up email from Lee, not Lee Peel, but L-E-E. Says, "Hey guys, sorry about my last email. I didn't realize that I hadn't really asked anything until you read it out. My apologies. Not a problem, Lee." John was right. I don't tend to have pain with my patella tendon when jogging or cycling. However, if I hit a steep hill when cycling or jog on more than one occasion a week, I tend to tweak it and hurt it the next couple of days from basic movements like walking, upstairs, going upstairs, standing, sitting, etc. Essentially, I'd like to know what exercises, cardio workouts I can do to maintain, possibly improve my strength and lose the fat, which is my primary goal at the moment, without aggravating any of those injuries. Also, what I can do to strengthen those areas to hopefully reduce the chance of tweaking in the future. And finally, do you think the P90X routine is a good way to go to reduce fat and build muscle, especially considering my condition? Take care. John, what do you think?
It's still a difficult question, unfortunately, to answer. I mean, the obvious thing that steps out in this question was that nothing really happens when he's cycling or jogging, unless it's on more than one occasion a week, you know, or if it's a steep hill. So it's kind of like, you know, it hurts when I do this, so don't do that. You know, I would just go at it from that standpoint first. Take a week or two or a few weeks off of doing the actual event that's causing the pain or causing the issue, and then reassess from there. Why that's happening, I can't really tell you, but generally speaking, muscle strength and the type of movement that's occurring because of a possible lack in strength, that would be my first place to look. So, you know, tweaking a knee, there's so many things that can go wrong in a knee. I don't really know what that means, unfortunately, so it's harder to give specific advice. But the same kind of standard, you know, rule of thumb, you know, look at your strength, look at your form in your exercise, both in lifting and in the running and cycling, which would be a little bit more obvious. And then, and of course, look at flexibility and soft tissue quality and foam rolling and all that kind of stuff that you would think of to do. If those types of easy, quick fixes don't solve the problem and it continues to happen and you continue to quote unquote tweak the knee, then there may be something more going on there where you should kind of seek someone out and make sure that you're getting proper care for it. But usually issues like this where they're intermittent, they're not all the time, well, it's only if I do this one type of event, then you at least have a clue as to what, if you can break down what's happening in the event. Does it hurt when you bend the knee or when you straighten it? Does it hurt at all during the event or kind of what it seems like here, it's something that's happening afterwards that may be related but not immediately related? So you've got some clues and sometimes you can figure out exactly what's going on from there. But it's a harder question to answer here. So go through the general prescription of strength, flexibility, and soft tissue, as well as taking, you know, a few weeks off. And if that doesn't take care of the issue, then you should probably see someone in person.
John, would you be able to ask that question from Liz, and then we're going to finish up by answering the question from Krista?
Sure. Where's the question? There we go. Hey, guys, love the podcast, and I tell everyone about them. I even taught my personal trainer a few tips that I learned from you. I love that. Here's my question. My thyroid is normal. I'm not anemic or depressed, but I'm tired all the freaking time. I wake up at 6 a.m. in bed usually around 10 to 10:30 p.m., work out at the gym around 10 a.m. for an hour, and by noon all I want to do is nap for 2 to 3 hours, which being a nanny as a job allows me to do that. Because I'm so tired, I'm also irritable and can cry easily. However, being a full-time nanny has caused me much stress in the past 9 months. I'm going to pause right there for dramatic effect. Also, this summer, my husband and I are leaving to spend a year backpacking across Europe and Asia, and I don't want to be dog tired all the whole time. My facts: I eat pretty healthy, mostly lean meats, eggs, fruits, veggies, and nuts. I'm lactose and gluten intolerant, but I'll eat rice and GF cereal now and again. However, I do know that as healthy as I eat, I don't eat enough, roughly 1,200 to 1,400 calories a day, and I've been doing that for years. Again, pause. Could that be a cause? Could I be overtraining my system? My workout consists of 20 minutes of high intensity on the elliptical, a day of heavy lower body lifting, a day of heavy upper body lifting, yoga once a week, and now I've started walking an hour a day at 4 miles an hour. I work out between 5 to 6 days a week. I'm 27, 5'6", roughly 155 pounds, and 24% body fat. Any help you can shed on my issue would be great. Thanks, guys. Liz. P.S. Kevin, you're not a bitch. And I, before you answer the question, Lee, I thought this was really good. She really laid out the issues that's going on with her. So I thought that was a pretty well worded question.
Is that
personally
an Insta Pink Dumbbell Award?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, sure. She did a
Insta
good job.
Insta Pink Dumbbell Award.
There you go.
There's the sound effect playing in the background, if I remember.
Insert YouTube of dramatic hamster. Dun, dun, dun.
Or the dude from Terry Tate, Officer Becker.
Yes. I think, and funny enough, where John's dramatic pauses fail, I think that there's a lot of your answers in your own question. When I first started reading it, you know, and you said you're tired all the time, all these things kind of started going through my head. And there are various things I'm going to talk about, particularly going to a doctor, because that's never a bad thing either. But I think where you're probably going to find most of your answers is the inconsistency in your diet for energy. Just providing you energy in general, and that's probably where your big thing is going to be. But let's just kind of I guess take it from step one. Step one, you know, there are just a few various things that could possibly lead towards you know, chronic fatigue or you know, basically make sure that whenever you have a big change in how you feel. Health-wise, whenever there's something that becomes new or different that was not perhaps there before, it's always good to just get it looked at by the doctor. It's just never a bad thing to do. Fatigue and being tired and things like that, it can always be kind of underlying issues. I think that they're explained in your case, perhaps, but I just think that I should throw it out there, considering that it's kind of something that came up, and you put that you're irritable and that you can cry easily and stuff like that, and that you're under a lot of stress, and just to make sure that it's not just diet and work related. Just throwing that out there just for the sake. However, the first thing that you point out is that you just took on a new job, in which that is very highly stressful. And I hate to be overly simplistic, but it's certainly a stressful job. Like that, working with a child. I mean, mothers, they become pretty tired and irritable all the time, and so can nannies. So I think that there's one aspect that you have a job that's very demanding to you. You wake up at 6 a.m. and you go to bed at 10:30. I'd be pretty tired, too, if I was doing that and not really eating much of anything, which you're not really doing. So I don't know if this is really one of those emails or one of those questions in which that I need to be like, take care of yourself and you just need someone to say it. I don't really know if losing weight is any sort of an issue for you or something that you want to do. My concern is why you're eating 1,200 to 1,400 calories a day. If you're trying to lose weight, are you losing weight? And if so, then you should be expecting to be more fatigued. I mean, a lot of people don't talk about it. And I always find it funny when I hear so much about people talking about how much energy they have when they start losing weight. But it's usually the opposite. You usually feel pretty tired and pretty run down and drained when you're trying to lose fat. No matter how healthy or how well you go about doing it, though, there are the best ways to minimize those side effects. So losing fat in general is a fatiguing thing. Our bodies have certain systems in place, and it will shut down the least needed systems possible, and try and cut back, if you will, on what it is that we're outputting for energy's sake to compensate for the lack of nutrition. So, you know, it's just one of those side effects that we kind of have to deal with. You know, that's my initial kind of point out. You're not really eating that much and you have a very high stressful job. It seems to me that being tired and stressed out is going to be something that kind of should affect you. I don't think this is probably going to affect you on holiday because you're probably going to be resting and eating and relaxed. So in that kind of aspect while backpacking, no, I probably doubt that you'll feel that way as long as that you're getting an adequate diet and as long as there's not something very wrong with you. But I mean, basically, I would really look at your situation, your training situation, and revamp everything you're doing. You're doing high intensity workouts, 20 minutes. I'm going to assume that you're doing some sort of variation of high intensity interval workouts. You know, you're doing a lifting program. You're obviously on your feet a lot. 12 to 1400 calories a day may be deficit numbers for you, but they may even be too low at that. Everyone's deficit number is different and you need to really calculate that. I would, a good cheat sheet is to literally just figure out how long do you sit for at a time in a day, how long do you sleep, and then how often do you walk or do physical activity, and just really just kind of try and add up the numbers. It's a really simple way to just look at your expenditure and then calculate what your deficit should perhaps be from there if that's what you're trying to do. If you're not trying to be in a deficit, then you need to eat more and that won't be a problem anymore. So based upon the information that you gave as far as the fat loss or if that's an issue, that's my only advice there. But I eating more, will it make you feel better and getting in some more carbohydrates for energy and fats? Yes, yes, and yes.
Liz also was the only one that sent in any kind of email saying I was not a bitch in the last week. So thanks for the support, guys. last question that we have comes from Krista. What up, Kev Lee and John? First of all, I've been following you guys for a few months and bothering both Kevin and Lee almost daily with questions, interesting articles, or just plain silly stuff on Facebook. I'm getting back into personal training after years of doing research for my PhD. My question to you all is this. How important do you think it is for a personal trainer to look the part? Do you think it depends on the clientele? I feel that some people may want their trainers to be the rock hard six-pack ab variety, while some others may want someone less the part. Do you think it depends on the clientele? I feel that some people may want their trainers to be... Oh, God, I just read the same line twice. That hasn't happened in so long. Sorry. I've seen trainers in all shapes and sizes, and quite frankly, it's difficult for me to listen to one who is carrying extra tires around with them and not for exercise. Of course, we should do the kind of training that gives us the bodies we want, but do you think we should take that into consideration when choosing clients or a specific location to work? Also, how much of a personal routine do you think is wise to share with your clients or the public, especially when they ask, "What will I look? When will I look like you?" One last for one for Lee. Any advice on getting the guys to respect you, being a small blonde female? Keep having fun. You've inspired and guided me so much. Life and love, life, live and love life. Sorry, it's early in the morning. It's noon. So we get a couple of things on that question. You know, one thing, do you guys think that people should, you know,
so many fails there.
And then, okay. What, Kevin?
Do you think people, yes. Do you think trainers should look the part? You know, do they need to look the part? Would you, you know, personally, you be, I mean, I guess it's hard to say what we think, you know, you know, but I guess the question is, what do we think or what do our clients think and stuff like that? You know,
I think
you go ahead.
Wow, there's a whole lot of stuttering there. I think my personal opinion is that a trainer shouldn't bring negative attention to his or herself. So looking the part is different from not looking the part. And I think that's the difference. I've seen great trainers that are in, you know, average shape, normal shape, but they're not in bad shape. You know, and we've always discussed, and I think all of us kind of agree too, a person's knowledge base is not necessarily reflective in what they outwardly appear like. But it is, you know, we're in a physical profession, and it behooves the personal trainer to at least look like they practice somewhat what they preach. You know, am I as big or as strong as some of the people I know, some of the non-trainers that I know? Absolutely not. But do I look like I'm not physically active? I would think that I do kind of look like that. And I think that's important enough to just kind of, because not only, you know, does it maybe give you some support from your clients, they'll trust you because they say, okay, this guy or this girl kind of walks the walk a little bit. But I think it also, it's just your body's your billboard. So I don't think that you have to be like a bodybuilder or like, you know, some kind of like triathlete looking individual. But, you know, if you're pushing, you know, 50 pounds overweight, you're missing something, I think. So I think that there's an importance to a certain amount, but it's not the first thing that I would judge a personal trainer on necessarily.
What do you think, Lee?
I mean, I agree that there's a big line between letting yourself go and being ripped and ready for stage competition. And it's an argument that we are going to go through time, you know, like, should I take a personal trainer seriously? Does it have six pack, or should I, you know, her thighs, they're just a little too big. And I don't want, you know, I think it's about how anal you're going to be. I think someone that looks like they take care of themselves and care about their presentation in general, no matter what field you are in, is an important thing. Looking, you know, be it a hairdresser, be it an insurance salesman, you want to deal with someone who looks like they care about who they are, period. So I think that the weight issue, I don't, you know, I find really isn't even so much this the issue. You know, in our field, yes, it is a very visual field, but I think it's more of an issue of, do you look like you train? Because I know a lot of males and females who are textbook for competition levels, 50 pounds overweight, but they look like they train, and they obviously do train and take very seriously their training skills. And
Lee, I gotta pause you for a second. Your audio is like all messed up. You might need
is
to
that me?
Unplug and then plug back in the headset, or it's probably John.
Yes,
it's
probably me.
Oh, it's John. Yeah, John, you want to unplug that headset and put it back in?
Really? It's me?
Yeah.
Wow.
Are we better?
No, you gotta wait for that headset. Now say something.
Ba 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 ba.
Amazing. All right, Lee, blah, continue. Blah. Thank you.
Okay. Where did I leave off?
Whoa! Whoa!
Lee Peel.
Well, edit it out. It's not like you don't have the power.
I don't have the power.
You have the power. Edit it out. Just
you can't.
I'm trying to figure out where.
Go on water unless you have power. Sorry, Back to Future. We just lost about 50 people.
Well, I'm, you know what, I'm splitting the Pink Dumbbell Award this month because Krista made Lee curse and Kevin fail all in one awesome question.
Back to Future reference is never a fail. And Lee, you were talking about people that were 50 pounds away from.
Thank you. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Kevin, for being helpful. Whatever. Anyway, what I was saying is okay, like take competition rep level. I think a lot of people are unrealistic about how lean really is. And I take just your kind of average general female personal trainers. There are a lot of them that feel that they are lean enough to be what it is that they need to be and look like they train, but in a competition sense, they still have 20 pounds left to go. Yet they have some definition, and they definitely look like they train and they look like that they have a kind of body type of a trainer, if you will. So I think that it's also understanding body composition in general, and what kind of a level I guess you're really talking about there. So in my opinion, looking like you care about yourself and training is obviously important, but needing to be like ripped, I think is highly overrated, and it's just going to vary between client to trainer, and it's just your personal opinion on what you need. I mean, maybe you need to look at that every day, and if you need to look at that, then find a trainer who both has that and the knowledge that you need, and that's really all you can do, and it's a personal preference. Some people like people that yell. Some people like people that are soft-spoken. Some, you know, and I think that becomes down to kind of a personal preference, but, you know. That's me. I don't think that lack of, I mean, I know 250-pound beer belly guys that really know their stuff. And I know that that's probably not what people want to hear, but some of the greatest coaches and trainers in the world were in horrible shape, you know? And so I can't say that it's the complete all importance. I do think that just in general for your personal self, that's what should matter, and it does say something to maybe a person's character or personality where they're at, but maybe not too. Maybe they're just happily married and they don't give a crap. They just don't care, and they're going to eat their pizza and they know their job and they're going to do it, whatever. So to me, I just don't really care much, I guess, but maybe that's because I know that at any moment I can do whatever it is I want to do. I don't know. Maybe it's that kind of power or knowledge thing. I don't know. Yeah, well.
I think it's an interesting topic. And then Todd, I hate to go back to Todd Duggan. He doesn't talk about this in the interview, but one of the things he said to us at our staff meeting was like, you know, you can't talk the talk. You have to also walk the walk. And I agree. I think it's all to a point. And you know, I don't look like Vin Diesel. I know. You know that. That would be nice and all. But my clients have never had an issue with it. A lot of my clients are like, man, you're too skinny. You know, you gotta like, I'm like, whose eyes are you looking through? But you know, I think for a lot of people, they're going to really see through a lot of that crap and they're going to be like, all right, this guy gets me results. Or this guy works with this other client who looks phenomenal. All right. Yeah, you know, I think it really, like everyone said, it just depends on the person. But if someone knows what they're talking about and they're going to get your results, then I don't think they're going to care. All you got to do, Krista, is just make sure you get results with your clients and you're going to be good to go. And just, you know, again, make sure you're also practicing what you preach to a point. Make sure you're also still going in and getting your lifts, your, you know, exercising as much as your clients are. And, you know, when you tell them to make sure you get, you know, 6 grams of fish oil a day, you're doing the same thing. Or making sure that they're also having their omelet for breakfast, make sure you're at least doing the same thing. I think that's what's going to do it for this week's episode. I'm really hungry. I haven't eaten in like 4 hours and 40 minutes. So, someone's breathing into the mic, but that's the way we wrap up the show. We just kind of let it peter out. Just die. But again, I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Todd Durkin. We have a ton of guests coming up in the next couple weeks. Like I said, please make sure you send in your questions to questions@thefitcast.com. You can also send in your voicemails to 978-633-3488, or you can email it to us in MP3 form. If you want, you can send an 8-track to my house, and I'll see if I can hook that up. Sure, I got one lying around here someplace. And God, I just can't get any jokes this week, huh?
No.
Just nothing. Well, I've been talking to you bozos for 3 hours, so it's because you bozos.
That is kind of funny.
You finding that funny was funny.
I was supposed to work out at least an hour and a half ago.
Yeah, and you're not walking the walk now, John.
Dude, John, you got to get in there for like an hour at least.
I got to work out too, actually. I got to do a phone call, and then I got to work out.
Got to work on my fitness.
All right, well, do all that stuff. If you want, you can check out that article on the Virgin Mobile website. I'll probably link to that in the show notes. And that's it. Hope you all have a great week. We'll see you next time. Oh, yeah, iTunes. Did that.
The Whip.